This episode of Well Met is brought to you in partnership with Legion by Lenovo and Intel. Find out more about Legion by Lenovo on Facebook and Twitter at Legion by Lenovo.
We're almost there. Quiet down, everyone. This is not like any of our previous expeditions. This will be far more ambitious.
You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Everybody, welcome to episode 107 of Well Met. We are a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. Today is May 1st, May Day 2017 from Denver, Colorado. I'm John Horseman. I'm done with college, boys. I'm done. Hey, look at me. Look at me.
Woo!
We're getting it. I'm doing it. It took way too long. I'm John Horseman. With me, of course, is the crew. Shut crowd, please. Please. Trying to do
really
a show.
Really excited for you.
Trying to do a show here. From Baton Rouge, Louisiana, it's Tanner Grace. Hey, Tanner, how you doing, man?
How's it going, John? Congratulations on being done with college. It's a really good feeling, isn't it?
It's amazing, honestly. I've got a busy month coming up in May. I can't wait to share it all with you all when it happens. But until then, my lips are seals. My lips are seals. So,
No one's going to
get that reference, by the way, and I'm going to be so embarrassed.
It's the dad joke thing again, right? The fact that you already have dad jokes.
That's true. That's true.
You're so old.
Sorry, Dan. Next up, let's go over to Kansas City with J.R. Cook. What's up, J.R.?
Hey, John. No, seriously, congrats on getting out of college
and
becoming a real man.
Whoa. Whoa. Brutal. Yeah. Ouch. Well, thanks.
Don't go too far, JR. I don't know if he's a real man yet.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's talk about our weeks in Hearthstone. Dang. So Tannen, last time we chatted, you weren't legend yet. And you had said on the show that not only are you going to get legend, but you believe that you're going to finish higher in legend than JR. I want to hear more about this. Did this happen? Who won? Can we finally
there's a little bit of story here.
Okay.
So I did make it to legend. So thanks for the swift kick in the butt, JR.
Got
Thank
it.
You.
Great.
Thank
Sorry.
You. Oh, I don't the crowd's not as excited for me as
loud.
They are for you.
It's way too
I don't
loud.
Get it. I don't
they're
get it.
They're timid because they clapped too long last time.
Mm-hmm. JR is a gracious opponent in any bet whatsoever, and we decided to call this bet a draw because I'm pretty positive he actually destroyed me. But hold on, I got like deathly ill this weekend and like actually couldn't make it out of bed for a 24-hour period, couldn't eat solid food. You know, I was literally living off crackers and Gatorade and stuff. So
I'm pretty sure I would have won anyway.
So I've already told him I'm very willing to deem him the winner and pay off the debt. So next week we'll see. I might have some Kansas City stuff on because I believe that he would have won it, but I would have given it the good old college try, you know, if I would have had a chance to. But I don't think I had enough energy to even like lift my iPad and start like trying to go face more or less think out complicated play lines. So I was in a bad way this weekend. But other than that, I was pretty excited to make legend. It hadn't happened in a few months. Honestly, just JR, thanks for the swift kick in the butt, man. Honestly, like I really needed that motivation. I mean, I was probably going to do it anyway with Ongoro, but when I saw you make legend that early in the month, I was like, there's no way that I am not going to be a legend. There's no way I'm going to be you're going to be the only legend caster on this podcast.
I tried. I'm the better legend caster, though. So there is that.
Without a doubt.
Oh, my God. It's going to be like this. By the way, Tannen, I don't think you're alone, and JR, I don't think you're alone either in this month kind of being a momentous month for a lot of different for a lot of different people. I know specifically Mike S and David F let us know either by Twitter, email, Facebook group that they hit legend for the first time this month. So huge congratulations. And also our friend from they do the Calvary podcast, and it's Lords of the Storm, Multizord, Kevin Ellis also hit legend for the first time, got that legend card back. So big congratulations to all of you. And a lot of them did it with the Aggro Druid deck. They said that our Gainer Entertain segment was really helpful in piloting that style of deck and making those choices. So we're glad we could play a small, humble part in your grand legend. May you
I had a lot of good feedback about the burn mage and people using that and being very successful with it as well.
We even had a few people, they were talking about it in the Facebook group and somewhere else, that a bunch of people made what they call Dad Legend for the first time.
Yeah.
As well, which is, I think, rank 5. I had never heard of this until someone like Kibler or someone started making it a popular thing. But that's pretty awesome that people are getting this excited, because hopefully it's, you know, JR making legend that kind of push them to it a little bit. But it also screams a lot towards the fact that this set is just so great for the game. And the new rotation has been amazing, too.
Yeah, I'm going to take a lot of credit for getting people to legend, because people are like, man, if JR made it, I can do it too, because he's not that good at the game. So,
amen.
I'm expecting you to carry us this season, JR, so you better hold up to the fact that you're a legend player.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
You guys are cute. You guys are cute.
Oh, thanks.
Well, let's so JR, you hit it as well. So congratulations. And I know you're at the KC Firesides. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, because I know you got to play with some of the new features and things like that. So awesome. I can't wait to hear about it. But before we do, my week. I played some, got up to rank 5, hit dad legend. I have a dog. I'm a dog dad. Isn't that so offensive to all the parents who listen to the podcast? Are you offended by the fact that I call myself a parent because I have a dog? Let me know. TannenGrace@blizzpro.com. Just kidding. Don't do
Why?
That. I know.
Why?
I catch myself doing it all the time. Like, I'm like, I get the sentiment of people who want to say, like, oh, yeah, I feel like a parent, too, kind of thing. But I had parents, still have parents. And, man, it's totally different. It's totally different. There's your John dropped of knowledge thing. Let's go into the news.
This week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
Really good at words. First, we want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, Corell, and Variatus. Thank you so much for your support of WellMet. If you like WellMet, you're like, hey, can toss these guys a cup of coffee each month or whatever. We've got awesome perks and everything set up over at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast. Oh, I got it right. Hop on over there, sign up, get involved, get in on our patron-only Facebook group, which is a lot of fun. Hang out with us in Discord and, challenge Tannen to a one-on-one here, because he just can't seem to win. Literally giving wins.
I won one.
Yeah, barely.
Barely, you're right.
Barely. Anyways, patreon.com/wellmetpodcast is where you can find that. Let's jump into the big news this week. Hearthstone hit 70 million players. Yay. Woo. Yay. Log in now and get your 3 free Un'Goro packs. So do we have a timeline for how long you can do that? I'm guessing it's a while. So
month of May.
Yep. For the month of May. So huge congratulations. Now, you guys are both kind of plugged into the Magic scene and stuff. Like, do you guys know how this compares at all to like other CCGs and stuff? Like, 70 million feels huge. I know, like, World of Warcraft, JR, you were telling us before the show, took 10 years to get to 100 million. And obviously, it's different. It's an MMO. You need a computer. But still, like, that's a lot of users. And they did that in 3 years. How do you guys think it compares, whether it's to Magic or to other games? Is this a pretty big deal? Yes.
Yeah, I think this is a huge deal, actually. I'm going to take the Magic part, JR. And if you look at like Magic Online and that travesty of a client, I would seriously be so impressed if they had 1 million active people on that site ever, more or less like half of that. As for like Magic players around the globe, I think the last I heard the number was around like 12 or 14 million, possibly. It's a little different. You know, it's a physical card game, but it has been around since 1993. You know, it's older than some of our listeners and a lot of people who play Hearthstone as well.
People who host this podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. And people who host this podcast. Exactly. I'm old. So, I mean, you know, I was like 10 when I played Hearthstone at Magic anyway. but yeah, so like in comparison, I mean, this game is just crushing. Like Hearthstone is super popular. It's going to keep growing. No one's stopping it anytime soon.
Yeah. What do you think, JR, especially for Blizzard games, right? So you're the Blizzard game historian here on the show, and just out of anyone I know, this feels like a big deal.
I mean, this essentially becomes their second biggest game, right behind World of Warcraft, just in terms of players. Because like you said, World of Warcraft took 10 years to get to 100 million. Hearthstone got to 70 million in 3 years. Granted, they're different games, different style of games. Hearthstone's obviously free to play, but Blizzard has other free to play titles like Heroes of the Storm. And I don't even know how many players they have gone through on Heroes of the Storm because they have never announced those numbers. So I would assume it's not quite as high by any stretch of the imagination, where you see Overwatch, you know, just announced 30 million. This week as well, and that's only been out for a year. So Overwatch, you know, is really big as well. But you know, 70 million is a big number. It's not anything to scoff at. In terms of mobile games, though, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know enough stats to know about how mobile games go in as far as like active players over time on how Hearthstone ranks. But I do know that Hearthstone has made the most money for a digital CCG than anybody else. So
yeah,
there is that.
It's kind of a big deal, boys. We were not wrong to do a podcast on the fad of Hearthstone because it seems to be alive and well and ticking, which is great.
Especially for a game when originally announced, everybody was like, "What are you doing, Blizzard? This is the dumbest thing I have ever seen. Why are you making a card game?" And
yeah,
they knew what they were doing.
I remember hearing about that, and I heard about it the first time. I'm like, I have no interest in card games. How about you just start putting out better expansions, Blizzard, for WoW? Boy, was I wrong. Foot, mouth, say hello. So, all right, cool. So that is a big deal. Big congratulations to Ben Brode, Yongwu, the other ones on the Hearthstone team that we've gotten to meet. We really appreciate working with you. And here's to 70 million more. Let's talk about another piece of big news. Apparently this month, anybody can hit legend because Ben Brode finally hits legend this month. And that's a joke, by the way. If you hit legend this month, Kevin Ellis, I'm thinking of you. I'm not making fun of you. I did it with Secret Paladin the first time. I get it. Ben Brode hits legend for the first time, and he swapped out his Galaka crawlers. So those are the pirate destroying the 2/3s for 2 hungry crabs. That's the destroy a Murloc, gain +1/+1 or +1/+2, something like that. And went from rank 3 to legend in a single sitting. So, hey, congratulations, Ben. Congratulations. Take advantage of those Blizzard statistics. Say, hey, 80% Murlocs from 3 to legend. Change. Adapt, Ben Brode. And he did it. So, yeah, pretty good. Pretty big deal. But at the same time, I don't know. Anything you guys want to add to that or just...
I think it just goes to show just how many Murloc Paladins were climbing the ladder, because I know I ran into so many of them myself, especially even at Legend. Like, that is a deck that a lot of people have been playing, at least up to last week. I haven't played as much as last week, so I couldn't tell you right now.
Got it. No. So, that's cool. All right. Let's go talk about real news. Well, not real news, but this was a really interesting topic, which, by the way, if you don't follow the Well-Met Twitter account, you should start following it, because a lot of the topics that we're going to talk about this show, I'm usually tweeting out the day that it comes out. I usually tweet three things from the Hearthstone, from the world of Hearthstone to that Twitter, and you'll have kind of a little better idea of kind of what we're talking about. But Gamehaus, GameHaus.com, went ahead and published a pretty thought-provoking, I think, article, and one that's, I think, a great one to have a conversation about, called "The Evergreen Problem: Is It Time to Rethink Classic?" Tannen, I know you said you've had quite a few thoughts. Do you feel good kind of summarizing Alex Church's kind of thoughts behind this this article and kind of what was going on there?
Yeah, sure. So the article highlights a problem that you're going to run into in the game whenever something like this happens, where, especially now that you have a rotation, but you have an original set that's always going to be legal. The fact is that in a lot of classes, you see this in particular stuff like Warrior and Mage, that some of the cards in the original set are so strong and so like class defining that every time you build a deck, you have to build it around these cards. Like when you look at Mage and when you look at Warrior, it's like, well, like when I start my Warrior deck, it's like I'm putting in Fiery War Axe, I'm putting in Brawl, I'm putting in Grommish. If it's a controlish version, you know, you put in all your removal because all those cards were so well statted and kind of OP a little bit from the new set because they hadn't kind of figured out the exact balance yet. Same thing of Mage. Frostbolt's going to be in there. Fireball's going to be in there. You know, things like that. So it doesn't leave for as much room as creativity, and you're always having this skeleton that you're having to build onto or off of. So that creates kind of a problem in the future. So to kind of answer the question that they present in the article, I think the answer is yes. It is an actual problem that's going to happen in the future. I know I've said this before. I've brought it up before. It leads to less creativity in the game and less changes in the game. And I'm not sure what the correct fix is. Like, do you come out with like a new core set, you know, and get rid of all of that? But then it alienates a lot of people who have had these cards since day one. So there's no like perfect way to fix this. So it's an actual problem they have to come up with a fix for, and I do not envy them in that situation.
Yeah, I get it. So what do you think about this one, JR? You guys have seen so many iterations in Magic the Gathering. You guys have seen so much going on. We've heard a lot about Classic. It was just over a year ago, right, where they had kind of the summit where they brought in a bunch of Hearthstone streamers and personalities to kind of discuss at that point, which was Standard, which in turn was Classic. Well, ended up having a lot more emphasis on what would happen to Classic. What did you think of the idea of that these cards need to be rethought?
I'm not a big fan of, even though it's a digital card game, I'm kind of on the side of where Eric Dodds was when he was game director of Hearthstone, where I don't like the idea of my cards changing. Like, I don't like the ideas of cards getting nerfed unless absolutely necessary. Like, these cards are major problems and something needs to happen. And we've seen that from time to time. And the Hearthstone team has always been kind of reluctant to do it unless absolutely necessary. I'm not a big fan of buffing cards either, even though there are definitely some in the Classic set that would need it. So rethinking the Evergreen set, in my opinion, isn't the answer as far as like buffing up cards or nerfing cards or things like that. I think instead you need a solid rotation of cards from like other cards in Wild, bringing them in and making them part of the Evergreen set for that year. That to me is still like the biggest thing that I want to see.
The reverse Hall of Fame.
I want to see Yeah, I want to see cards like Lotheb come back and be in standard for a year. You know, or just various things like that. And by doing that, you can rotate out problem cards and then maybe rotate them back in later and rotate out different problem cards, you know, and things like that. It'll make the game a lot more fluid over the years, in my opinion, rather than buffing up, because the problem is still you're going to have the same problem even if you buff up cards or you nerf cards in a way, because those cards are still always going to be there, and they'll just be replaced by another card that will now become the new problem card. So I'd just rather see things rotate back and forth more than just leave it in there forever. But then you have the problem of what about new players and coming in and trying to build a set for the first time? If they build the classic set, they know that they're going to always have those cards and they're always going to be able to play them even in standard. If they step away from the game for a year, and this is a problem Magic the Gathering has right now. It's hard for me to go back and play because even though I have a ton of Magic cards, none of my Magic cards are good for me to play in the current format. Because I don't have like that quote-unquote classic set that I can just go back and build from right now. I would have to go completely all new, learn everything new about these new cards that are out, and then buy them or borrow them from friends to build something.
Yeah.
And see, JR kind of hit on something that I was going to talk on too here. He started to you're starting to see Blizzard kind of understand this problem and address it a little bit with the Hall of Fame. You know, they realized that a couple of the cards that they had in the core set were just so strong and so good. I mean, how many times did you make a deck and you're like, well, I need a 5-drop. Here's Azure Drake. You know, I'm just going to play Azure Drake in my deck because it's great. You know, like there's nothing wrong with this card. It's one of the best cards ever printed in the game and every deck can play it. And that's actually kind of a sign of a problem card, not something that's like just so busted. You know, it's not the same thing as like, you know, some of the problems we've seen in the past when we had like Buzzard Unleash or we had Gatchan Auctioneer at cheaper or Leroy at cheaper. You just had this problem that the card was so ubiquitous, it's in literally every deck, that is an actual problem too. You know, that doesn't breed diversity, that doesn't have like creativity in the game. You're just having very stale, stagnant stuff that everyone's playing the same stuff. And they kind of want to avoid that. And that's what this article is getting at, is like, they want to see new things. And you're seeing that now. This new set's great about it, but you're still seeing decks with a ton of the old stuff from the original set too. So you have to find some kind of happy medium. And you're seeing them address that already with the Hall of Fame. And I like this idea of it. You know, they'll go piece by piece and kind of have some stuff rotating. But I like the idea that JR brought up of like switching them in and out, like possibly having reprints. Like it doesn't cost them anything. You know, some people might get upset if they open it up in a pack, but think about if a new set came out and they just included a couple of the older cards in it. You know, like, oh, you could open Alex Straza in this set because it's still legal while we rotated the other stuff out. You know, they could like put the legendaries in that are still legal from the core set.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. It's just like the start of a brainstorm of this idea. You know what I mean? Like just a couple of different things they could do with it. Obviously, this is the reason I don't design games. You know what I mean? Like they would not work.
I was just thinking about the complaints right now that people are.
Oh, of course.
Legendaries of this set. And if you start including old legendaries, how upset people are going to be if they reopen them.
They're going to be upset about everything, JR, though. You could put a $100 bill in the pack and they're going to complain that it's crumpled when it comes out of the pack. All right. So, I mean, we're never going to please everyone.
Tannen's jaded. So,
yes.
I like the points you guys made. I want to bring up another point. And because, you know, in the end, I think that making the classic and basic sets more powerful and changing those to be more in line with, like, current power isn't that, like, sure, I think in an ideal world, that's totally fine logic. But I think the author kind of thinks over one critical concept that the Hearthstone team has been very adamant about the basic and classic sets as well. And that's easy to learn cards, right? Buffing these cards. Sure, if it's just a numbers game, it's a 5-4, now it's a 5-5. Sure, that card's not inherently more difficult to understand. But changing cards or buffing cards or getting rid of all the cards with no text, you know, your Boulder Fist ogres and stuff. Also,
hey, you
has
show some respect to Boulder Fist Ogre.
I'm just saying he doesn't have cards to card text. I know. He's totally great.
I love that card.
He skips out of Big Game Hunter. I remember that. I remember those days when people ran Boulder Fist Ogres instead of Dr. Booms for like a few weeks there, just because it would get past BGH. And that was silly.
Very.
And, you know, I think that there's a part of that too, where it's, you know, especially the basic cards, right? Like those are, we can just call them learning cards at that point. Cards that are easy to understand, cards that are relatively obvious in how they work. And I think that, you know, looking at buffing and changing those, they're not mutually exclusive. I'm not saying that you can't have powerful cards and also have them be easy to understand, because I think Hearthstone does a decent job of that. But I think that's another aspect of leaving these things alone, right? Imagine a new player logging in and all their basic cards have changed now. And the ones, you know, the free-to-play player that plays from 25 to, you know, 20 or 18 that month, right? That's going to have a big impact there. And yes, we can go round and round about how much that person matters versus somebody who spends hundreds of dollars on the game and all that kind of stuff. We're not going there. For the record, I think every player matters. So, just saying it here. So I think it's an interesting concept, right? And I think JR, your solution of like introducing like a reverse Hall of Fame, like when somebody comes out of retirement, yeah. Is there a term for that? Is there a term? But like bringing them out of retirement, basically.
The Brett Favre. I
mean, exactly. The Brett Favre. The Brett Favre.
Mike. Thing. Yeah. The original Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that's true. Go play baseball too. Yeah. So I thought this was a pretty interesting conversation, and we wanted to have it. Are there any other thoughts that you guys have about kind of changing the energy or the evergreen set at all?
The only thing I would say is I do think that something needs to happen to just keep Hearthstone from getting too stale by being too dependent on the classic set, which it will always be for eternity as long as the current way they are doing it is in place.
Right.
The Hall of Fame helped, though.
And I think a thing, too, is that spells in the classic set are actually quite strong, right?
And important, like for class identity.
Right. And you can't, and it's tough because spells have kind of become something that is, you know, so key to class identity. If you put those in an expansion, imagine Wild Growth or Innervate being an expansion card and not a classic card, right? Or basic or whatever it is. Like that would actually change quite a bit how Druid is played. And yes, it's OP, but it's different. So, yeah. Anyways, let us know what you guys think about an evergreen set and how you would address the issue if you have any other thoughts on that. JR, you were hanging out with Mr. Sam Benson this weekend at the KC Firesides. How'd that go?
Yeah, so this weekend, this Saturday, Sam had his KC Firesides event, and it was really fun. Very Un'Goro themed. He had, you know, little vines hanging up in the bar, and these little dinosaur paw prints on the floor, and he had these rock crystals and dragon eggs you could get. And he was wearing the little explorer's hat as well as the innkeeper. So he kind of went all out on that. But before the event started, he announced to us, to the people that were there, that when we logged in, we would get to see the new Fireside Gathering features that Team 5 has been working on and released out in beta. And we were one of the first in the world to be able to play it.
Lucky.
Yeah. Wow. So that was pretty cool because he took like all of our battle tags and I guess Blizzard wanted them for some reason. He didn't know why. So I'll be interesting to see what happens there, if anything. But also we were able to provide feedback and surveys to Blizzard as well because they had their eyes on our specific event there for this. And it was cool because it was, well, first of all, there was a few bugs with connecting. We kind of expected that because this is, you know, Blizzard's first attempt at this. The whole reason why it's in beta is to test this stuff out. So we had a lot of problems like logging in to begin with. But once that got resolved, it was really cool to just click on the little fireside gathering button, make sure that you're connected to the Wi-Fi that the innkeeper was providing. And sure enough, it popped up with his banner and
it was
the,
his banner?
Inn name. Yeah.
Awesome.
And it was called the Clever Name Inn because he had sent to Blizzard. He's like, because they asked him for the name and he said, well, name it either like Casey Firesides or something clever. So they
That's hilarious.
So they said not Casey Firesides, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, we're going to take the clever name.
How was the interface? Pretty smooth, like not too overwhelming.
No, it was once you opened up your friends list, you saw everybody that was also connected and like they were your friends. So you could sit there and challenge them by just clicking a button without having to go, hey, you want to play? I need your battle tag. Let me add you.
Right.
Now
they've had that
play.
Nearby feature before, right?
They have. But this just makes it
right
simple, right? And then you can just click and add them as a friend very easily. But the best thing is you had the new ability for these specific fireside tavern brawls. So when you clicked on challenging someone, you can choose challenge them to a fireside tavern brawl, or you can also do the regular tavern brawl if you wanted to. But this one, they had a very specific fireside tavern brawl. And all of the fireside tavern brawls are going to be co-op. Looks like. And this one was co-op. It's one that they had released already as a tavern brawl before. It was the Nefarian one where you had Nefarian, the O200, and you had to take him down. And one player was playing priest and the other was shaman. It was when they were introducing Mortal, the Oracle, as a new hero. And that was the tavern brawl.
Got it. Okay.
With him. Remember Got that it. One?
Yeah.
So that was this one. But it was very cool because I could sit there and challenge someone, go sit next to them, and then we can plan out our turns together and just talking back and forth. And it was a great way to meet new people and chat while also playing Hearthstone without playing against each other, right? You're going for the common goal. And Sam had a competition going because at the end, you had the biggest attack creature, and it would show it on the screen at the end of your match, and also how many turns it took to complete. So you had a competition on whoever had the biggest creature and who was able to win it in the least amount of turns. And
got it.
Those people got a prize.
Got it. Cool. That's neat. Well, we can't wait to hear more about Fireside Gatherings, and somebody please in Denver, do it. Gosh. I know it was supposed to be
Damon Ben Rouge.
It was supposed to be
Damon
Ben
Rouge. Same.
Yeah. So I skipped over one thing on accident because we forgot to add something to the show notes. But Hearthstone did also unveil the first ever Wild tournament that's been run by Blizzard. And how it's going to work is the top 64 Wild players in May have the opportunity to qualify for this Blizzard-sponsored tournament. It's all we know so far. It's just one tweet, and they said more details to come. So we're really excited to see what people are doing with Wild. I know Freshka over at twitch.tv/Freshka is grinding ladder a little bit and grinding Wild, which, by the way, if you're looking for a good coach, if you're looking for a good Hearthstone coach, hit him up on Twitter. Trust me, I would not be nearly as knowledgeable at Hearthstone without that guy. So definitely do that.
One more thing.
Okay, sorry.
I wanted to add to the fireside things. If you are in the Kansas City area or anywhere near the Kansas City area and you want to go to one of these firesides, BlizzPro is partnering up with KC Firesides in June, and we're going to have an event Saturday, June 17th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Boulevard Brewery. We're going to have tickets for up to 75 people. It's going to be a big one, and I'm hoping to get John and Tan in there.
Dude, give me the info. I'll look up flights like tonight.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's go ahead and actually, you know what? We're going to kind of, well, let's play the sounder.
Journey to Ungoro.
How did you convince me to do this?
Journey to Ungoro.
Whatever.
Anyways, normally we take a second and break down, talk about the meta reports. Not a whole lot has changed, to be completely honest. It's, kind of the same old bag, but Vicious Syndicate did come out with their second Ungoro meta report. And there was also a great article on like the stat completion on Ungoro quest completion, which basically was like how often how often a quest was played, how often it was completed, and how often they won. And it was kind of pretty interesting to kind of see. And basically the big takeaway is Rogue and Warrior quests are the highest win rate, and the rest are down in the 40s for the most part. Death Rattle Priest does pretty well. Murloc Shaman does pretty well. But besides that, the rest are in the red. So kind of interesting there.
Priest and Shaman do very well in Wild,
right,
by the way.
Is that not what I just said?
You might have, and I probably spaced out.
It's
sorry.
Okay. Sorry. I just suck at talking. I don't know why I do a podcast. Somebody help me. So
I suck at listening.
Somebody help. Send help, please. That was kind of interesting. And we might come back and revisit that some other time. But what I really want to chat with you guys about is we got an email that we wanted to talk about from last week. And we actually have two things we wanted to discuss. First, from C Sharp Fritz on Twitter, tweeted at us and asked, can I suggest a topic this week? Yes, you can. Best Ungoro legendaries to craft. I'm way short on cards and need to craft some. And we were talking about this and we're like, cool, what would we craft? And I think there's a lot of like obvious ones where it's like, if you're going to play Quest Rogue, craft the quest kind of thing. But then we're kind of like, you know what? It's really early. It's really early right now. And it's not something to just throw your dust away on a golden Varian Rin JR and, end up.
That got disenchanted, by the way.
Really? Boo. Yes. We should have made it so you couldn't disenchant it. But we, instead, what we were like, you know what? What if we didn't discuss the actual cards to craft, but what if we talked about ways that viewers and listeners and us can kind of adopt to be a little bit more methodical in what we craft? And so this actually came up about a week and a half ago on Reddit by Reddit user TickRue8. And submitted a suggestion for a system that lets you score different aspects of legendary cards, or any card really, and combine them to see how desirable the card should be to craft. With it being this early into Journey to Ungoro, we don't want to make strong recommendations on legendary cards. But what we can show you is some cool tools that you can use and adapt to help measure the potential for desirability for certain cards. And so this systematic legendary crafting systems, with what I'm just going to call him Tick. What Tick did is he used six different criteria for rating a card, and basically simplified it down to this: power level, versatility, longevity, synergy, fun, and resilience. And basically he would take a card, you take a legendary card, and you would rate each one of those aspects 1 to 5. Okay, fair enough. And then you add up the score at the end. It's an unweighted type of classification. Fairly straightforward and easy. We didn't love the actual criteria he used, but we loved the idea. We thought it was like, oh, that's a cool idea. Now, keep in mind, this is a very important asterisk. This is like the vanilla test. You know, we talk a lot about the vanilla test and WoW. It's like, cool, do the stats match the mana cost well? And, you know, Divine Shield is roughly worth like whatever it was. It used to be like 1.3 mana. So, you know, there's stuff like that. Does this match the vanilla test? You can't just gauge any card just by the vanilla test, just like you can't use this test to gauge the power of a card either. So please, 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 please keep that in mind. Use this as part of your assessment of being a critical thinking Hearthstone player and not a uncritical thinking net decker like myself. There you go. So, let's, Tannen, I want to shoot this one to you first. Power level, versatility, longevity, synergy, fun, and resilience. What type of things or topics would you use if you were going to kind of develop a like a grading card, I guess, for cards?
I think this guy mostly hit it on the head here, actually. These are pretty good. Besides the fun one, I think winning is fun. So for me, it's going to be the other categories all kind of go into it. I just want to know the power level of a card, you know, like just how good it is. And that means how craftable it is for me. So those take precedent over for me more than, say, like the other ones. So, you know, I'm going to have a little bit of a different weight than most people because I'm like purely competitive mostly. You know, I don't like playing games casually as much. So fun has like literal zero, like the card could be 10 out of 10 on fun and I'm not going to care. If the deck's not good that it's in, I'm not crafting it. But when you think about it, you have to think about like what's more important to you personally. So I think you have to kind of like put a different weight system on some of them. But I think the guy hit it on the head on like pretty much every other one.
Sure. Do you, what do you think, JR? Do you like these? Are there different ones that you would add?
I'm not sure if there's different. Maybe there is. I can't think of any right now. But see, I've written in the past like what legendaries to craft, and I've written, and the articles have done pretty well actually. And we just put out one recently on this set. I didn't write it, but another person on our team did. And there is one thing that I always use. When I would rank what I would consider like a must craft versus something you can ignore. And that is by far versatility. A lot of my lists that I would come up with would end up being neutral legendary cards, would be like the top ones because you can use them in like every deck. Like I remember when I wrote the original one, and I had Ragnaros, Sylvanas, and Blood Mage Thalnos, I think is like some like my top three must craft in the original vanilla. Mm-hmm. And when I look at like Un'Goro, for example, it's kind of tough because there's only what five neutral legendary cards. Because this was the first set that had two legendaries for each class. So Un'Goro is a little bit of a different beast in that regard. So at that point, you kind of need to look at what I feel is what he has is necessity on. Is this card necessary to run this deck?
Necessity is one that I put in there. Necessity isn't one of his, but sorry.
Oh,
to continue. Yeah.
I was just seeing it in the show notes. So that would be one that I would add, John, is necessity. I agree with you 100% on that.
Yes!
Got him.
Just for the fact that, you know, especially for like Quest Rogue, like I am never going to be able to play that deck unless I have the legendary quest.
Right.
So it's a necessary card.
Right. Cool. So I'm glad that you're at least somewhat on the same page as me there. So the ones that I came up with, and we're going to do kind of an example of this right here on this show so we can kind of explain how it works. And hopefully you guys think it's kind of cool and fun. But the ones that I like to use, or I was thinking would be helpful to use, was for a basic one. Honestly, I'm a stats guy. I'm a stats major. I would weight the crap out of these different things. I would add fun and give it a lower weight than everything else. So it's in there, but it doesn't just get a 1 through 5, right? So there's other ways you can tweak it. For a basic one, I have vanilla power level. So it's Kartex power level, longevity, versatility, and necessity. Those are my 5 that I like. And I'm going to explain them a little bit more in depth in a second. So we're going to take a well-known and probably the most popular legendary, now, especially now that Rag is gone, Blood Mage Thalnos. So Blood Mage Thalnos, let's talk about its vanilla power level. It's a 2-mana 1/1. That's not great, right? Vanilla card text, that's not that good. On a scale 1 to 5, that's a 1 or a 2, right? So you get your little scorecard out, put a little 2 next to vanilla power level. Then you have the power level of the card text. It has spell damage. It draws you a card when it dies, and it's cheap. That's strong. That's an easy 5, right? Would you guys agree? Easy 5?
Yeah.
Perfect. Then we have longevity. How long can you play this card and what is required to play it? This is an interesting one. It wouldn't have been an issue before standard. But for example, we would get, like in December, we were getting questions like, what should I craft? And Reno decks were doing really well. They were doing amazing, but it was really difficult to recommend to budget players to craft Reno if they have no interest in going and playing wild. They want to play the main. They want to play the main ladder, standard ladder, and that's just going to be 1600 dust that they're not going to be able to use in 3 or 4 months. Longevity wouldn't be great there. But here, unless it goes into Hall of Fame, it's neutral, and it's a classic set. So you've got that. So that's an easy 5. Then you've got versatility. I'd say this is one of the weakest parts of this grading system is versatility. But versatile, when you're not able to craft every card, the most versatile legendaries tend to be the ones that are the safest to craft. Ragnaros, Sylvanas, Bloodmage Thalnos. These types of cards ended up getting seen anywhere. When you needed a late game card, one of the first cards you went to was Ragnaros. When you needed an early game card or you needed something to help out in your spell heavy deck, you went to Thalnos. When you needed something mid-range and control-y, you went to Sylvanas. Just made sense. So versatility, this is probably one of the most versatile cards in the game. As long as you're running a deck with spells at some point. Like Face Hunter, I don't think would really run this, even though it draws you a card because it's more often dead and you're not usually needing that spell damage, at least from that minion. So, 4.5, 5, right? Whew, almost there. Necessity. So this is, I think, one of my favorite ones is necessity. Can you make a deck that does the same thing without this card? For example, JR hit the nail on the head. Quests. You can't freaking have a quest rogue without the rogue quest. It's a 5, right? This is a 1. You don't typically need Blood Mage Thalnos to make any deck. It's just not a staple, right? So, when you add all those up, we did a 2, 5, 5, 5, and 1. You get an 18 out of 25 scale. So, hey, Blood Mage Thalnos is an 18 out of 25. I would love to see, we should have done like Dr. Boom or something to see how it differs because it like passes Jeez. On everything. It's like, that's a 23 out of 25. Maybe he loses in vanilla card text, I guess. That's about it.
I don't even know if he loses in that.
What? Sorry, vanilla stats, 7 mana, 7/7. It's not bad though. Like you lose, like what at worst it's a 3. So, yeah. So, anyways,
yeah, and then like,
Yeah.
There's so like the other thing too. When you look at the scale, because like here's the thing, this 18 is better than other 18 subjectively, because yeah, you have a category that's a one and another category that's probably a one, maybe a two, and then three categories where it's a five. It's max. And right. I would take that over a card that's just like a bunch of threes, you know, or a bunch of fours.
Right.
I'd want a card that's a like, thought. Yeah, way higher, you know, in priority that like, this card is great when I'm playing it instead of just like, it's always okay.
Right. Jack of all trades, master of none type thing.
Yeah.
Got it. So that kind of puts the cap on this. I think that this was kind of an interesting thing to discuss. And we found it interesting. We talked about it quite a bit. So we wanted to kind of bring you through it, but please, first, this is not biblical, and experienced players like Tannen and JR and half of me don't understand all of the nuances, but experienced players also begin valuing cards using a system similar to this. Just saying would do when new cards would come out, he would go do vanilla test scoring on stream, and it was fascinating to watch. He was just grading cards on a number scale based on what the card had, and basically came up with his own numbering system for the power level of these cards. Less experienced players, though, and I think I would put us in the category of this sometimes. Have you ever heard, you know, we've done a card review now. I think all three of us have done a card review. You know how every time a card comes up and we rate it poorly and they're like, no way, you're going to be able to do this and this, and they're dead by turn four. And you're just like, yeah, buddy. Okay. I think less experienced players tend to put a lot of emphasis on too much value on synergies and god combos, right? Like Trogzor was another one. It seemed poised to do so well. Like, oh, you just combo it with this, and boom, you're done. And one turn kill, full board, all you got to do. And, you know, so this is one way to start grading cards that's unbiased. When you're looking at their crafting potential, their power level, and playability, a card doesn't immediately fail because it scores low on this scale. Quests score low on this scale. They have really crappy statted power stuff. Like, they don't do anything for you. And nor does a high score guarantee it'll do well. Trogzor, Varian Wrynn, both cards that would do really well. But we hope that this helps our listeners think about crafting in a new and methodical way. Whew. That's about all the talking I'm going to do for the rest of this show. So I'm going to pass it on to the rest of you. We also got another email from Brandon K. And basically what he asked is, how do you think the classes are represented in Un'Goro? Is Warlock at the bottom for the unforeseen future? Thanks for your email, Brandon. Tannen, I'm going to have you go first, dude. So what do you think about distribution overall of classes in Un'Goro? Let's start there.
Rip Warlock, and it's such a sad day for me too. It's my first legend deck and stuff. I'm a big fan of Zoo as a deck, but yeah, I mean, like with the distribution, it just seems like it got left in the cold. It seems like Priest continuously gets left in the cold. It's just not getting the tools that it needs to really, really compete. While you're seeing some of the stronger classes stay stronger, you know, like not Shaman so much, but you know, Warrior and Rogue traditionally been some of the strongest classes in the game, and they got the best quests in the set. And I think that's actually the most telling part of like what classes got represented the best in the set is they just got the best two extra legendary, since you know each class always gets one, but now they got two in the set, and they got by far the best two of the guaranteed ones. So I think that's a reason why you're seeing that kind of happen a little bit here. But you know, it's still early. Things are shifting out. I'm telling you right now, you're gonna see Shaman a lot more. Some decks did really well at DreamHack over the weekend with Shaman. There's a control Shaman variant out there that like counters this meta pretty well. You're going to see stuff like that, but don't hold your breath on Warlock too much.
Yeah.
I would agree with not holding your breath on Warlock, because Warlock by itself, like the thing about Warlock is it has the most powerful hero power in the game.
Yep. Not close.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things where if Warlock, like if someone figures out how Warlock works in this meta, Warlock's going to shoot right up. Yep. And, you can potentially run, like, I think a lot of people were misjudging on thinking, and I was one of them, thinking that discard Warlock was going to really be good because, you know, they're pushing for it, right? Blizzard was giving you the tools to make it work. And it just doesn't really work as well in this meta. But you're starting to see, you know, some zoo come out of that. But unfortunately, other classes are doing zoo a little bit better than Warlock is right now. I think the, like, where Warlock is going to shine is going to be more of a control Warlock. And I don't think people have played around enough with Kazakus right now in this meta. And I really think that Warlock has a handlock variant right now with Kazakus without Reno, because you still have the tools of handlock, right? Without Reno, because you still have Kazakus and you still have Jiraxxus. And you can potentially see like a pretty good Kazakus Reno styled handlock control deck that I think could be successful in this meta. So I wouldn't hold Warlock out. And Priest has had some pretty good early success with Silence Priest. And I think there's still some decent semi-Dragon Priest that's pretty good that can be competitive. And I know some people are playing it in tournaments and stuff. Lyra is actually a really powerful legendary that Priest got. So I think right now, like, I really feel good about where the classes are. Like, I don't feel like one is completely left out of the dust like it was last set, where Hunter was just at the bottom and there was nothing it could do because Reno just destroyed Hunter, basically. Mm-hmm. And when Reno rotated out, Hunter got stronger. Paladin last, before Standard, no one hardly played. Now Paladin has, you know, a really good chance, is one of the top tier decks right now.
Right.
And Tarim is one of the best legendaries that you can get right now with the style that Paladin plays. And it fits in several different Paladin decks. You can play aggro Paladin with it. You can play mid-range with it. You can play control with it. It's a really good legendary that would rank high on John's standard. So I feel like right now classes
don't
are...
Don't call it mine. Place. It's not mine.
Well, it's not yours, but you added stuff to it, and I like your version better than
then it's mine.
Yes.
Cool. Tannen, what did you think here? So, do you think let's ask the second part first? Is Warlock in trouble? You don't think so?
I mean, I think so. Like, I really do. Like, I do agree with JR that if we could find a way to make a control deck in it, then you can really, really start to like abuse the hero power a ton, because I think the aggro deck's just not good enough. The other aggro decks just kind of beat you up too much and you just can't get through Taunt Warrior enough. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't have the stats to get through that deck. So I think it's in just a really bad spot here right now. I'm not saying it's unplayable. No deck is really like unplayable, but I'm talking about like, you're not going to see this on the meta reports as like tier one or even tier two anytime soon. But, you know, maybe Handlock makes kind of a comeback, like something, you know, happens. There's going to be something show up. You know, there's been a couple of extra tools get printed for that kind of thing going on. And JR makes a really good point about Kazakus. Like, you've seen some Priest decks kind of show, but because they have another card where singletons matter, let's say they printed another card like that for Warlock, and hey man, you might be cooking with something right there.
I mean, that's what we talked about quite a bit with Grimy Goons Paladin at the beginning of Mean Streets of Gadgetzan, right? Where just like, oh man, they're just, it's not working. It's just so bad. You know, and I think somebody said it. I thought it was me, but it probably might not have been me. It was like, I feel like it's just one or two cards away though from being really good again. I just think it is. I think you run Divine Shield and you get those hand buff cards and you just profit. And, you know, I feel like Warlock is very much in the same way. It's missing two to three key staple cards, but this expansion should have illustrated to people that just a couple cards can absolutely change the viability of a class, deck, or archetype. And I don't think that it's all right to count that out too much. And if a class isn't playable for an expansion, don't yell fire. There's every single expansion that we've seen so far has had at least, honestly, in the past, 2 to 3 unplayable classes in the last couple of iterations. We've only seen, you know, 1 or 2. Right now, I think you could argue one you could classify as unplayable when you're comparing it to the other ones. But even then, I've seen some people do some work with some Warlock decks. I've gotten wrecked with some discard stupid decks sometimes, and it's just ridiculous. So,
like, right now, I would not feel bad playing any class on the ladder and feel competitive. Whereas before this rotation happened, like, there were certain classes where I would not play because it just felt bad.
Yep. And there are other classes, you know, too, where I think of like Beast Druid, where Beast Druid has all the tools that like it should need, and it just doesn't, just can't do it. Beast Druid will never happen. TM. I'm calling it right now. What else? Anything else you guys want to add on that here? Good.
I think Bolster Warrior was almost there. Bolster just needed to last dreaming. one more expansion.
Get out of here. Boo hiss.
Bolster Warrior.
Get out of here.
Taunt Warrior happened, but without Bolster.
Yeah. Hey, light show this week. Light show this week. But it's all right. Sometimes we need that in our life. take the extra 10 minutes you'll get by the end of this show. And walk your dog, spend time with your kids, your loved ones, and say, thank you, Will, Matt, for giving me a little extra time with the things that matter. All right, let's go ahead and get out of here. First, Patreon. Any updates to the Patreon, Tannen?
It doesn't look like we have any new Patreons this week, John.
We don't. Okay. We'll work on this. We'll make it. We'll make it work for you.
I was supposed to be iTunes this week, and I was ready for it.
You were supposed to be. You've never been iTunes. JR always mispronounces iTunes. It's his thing. It's his bit. JR can't mispronounce iTunes. Why do we have JR? Just kidding. Drive. That's not true, JR. That is not true. I was saying it for the joke. Anyways, thanks to our friends of the show, Albert T., The Real Ben, Carell, and Variatus. Thank you so much. If you like the show, head on over to patreon.com/wellmanpodcast. Find out how you can involve. JR, what
and,
we...
and I want to add something about this Patreon thing. Just $1. $1 gets you into our Facebook group, and we've been having some great discussion about deck lists and things in there.
Oh,
and, yeah. We would love to have you there.
I'm super active in it. I love hearing everybody's stuff in there.
Every
like,
day.
I'm in there every day. Yeah, I love it. And like, we had to see people get the legend for the first time this month.
That was great.
That was awesome to watch these guys push that hard and like talk about deck lists, and like people are posting and like, this is what I have working for me. And someone's like, I can't get past rank 5. What are you playing with? And they try somebody else's deck and get there. It was just awesome to see.
Good point. It is a good point. I just do want to point out one thing. I love the fact for like Tannen, I think of you like as a really hip and kind of trendy guy, but you use Facebook as your primary form of social media. I think it's hilarious.
I'm old. Hilarious. What do you expect?
Fair enough. I think it's funny. iTunes reviews. JR, what do we have going on there?
Yeah, so we had an iTunes review this week all the way from Russia.
Ooh.
From,
with love.
Pigzich? Is that it?
That sounds very close to a bad word.
I made John die. It's okay. I will spell it out, and then you guys at home can figure out how to pronounce this. PXGXSX.
This guy just angrily hit his keyboard when he had to make an account. He just jammed his hand on the keyboard real quick.
Pigeon.
Oh my gosh.
You have to speak Russian to pronounce it, I'm
pretty
sure.
That's enough. Now what you're going to need that extra 10 minutes for this week, listeners, is to get over JR's pronunciation of that name. Anyways, Let's go ahead and get out of here. Shout outs for the week, and where can people find you? Tannen, you're up first.
You can find me on Twitter at the Tannen Grace. Pretty easy to find me on there. I want to shout out to a good personal friend of mine, Jeffrey Clark. He came up one win short of top 16ing at DreamHack this week in Austin. He was one win short of doing it last year as well. He plays for Cyclone GG. His name online is Appa. Very good player. He streams a little bit in his spare time. I'll probably tweet about him in the next day or two because he's going to start streaming a bunch again. I think he does some coaching and stuff too. Very underrated player, and I expect good things from him this year. I think he's going to go pretty hard.
Yeah, cool. What about you, Jared? Oh, sorry.
He's also, yeah, I think he hosts a Hearthstone podcast as well, Coin Concede, along with I just blanked on her caster name. Her Hearthstone caster name. Cora, what's her Songbird. Sorry, I almost said Raven.
Yeah.
Songbird and Raven. I get it.
I got it mixed up.
JR, what about you? Shoutouts for the week. Where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Aldorian. I try to tweet there from time to time. I would like to give a shout out to all of our listeners that hit Legend this month and shared it with us. You guys are awesome. I hope you do it again this month, because I plan on trying to. So come join me and be Legend again.
Awesome. As for me, I actually have a small announcement. I actually am joining Onslaught Clan on their streaming team. So I'm going to be, yeah, it's a pretty exciting time. It's going to put me in a position to be able to chat with a lot of other partnered streamers and just excellent people all around. And I'm really excited to join up with them. If you want to check out them and their stream team, go over to onslaughtclan.com. It's also my Twitter bio. Find me on Twitter at KickTripod and find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/KickTripod. I got my affiliate stuff today. So I am now a Twitch affiliate, which is pretty exciting. So yeah, cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Thanks for joining us for episode 107 of Well Met. We record live 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and twitch.tv/BlizzPro. Again, that's on Mondays. You can find awesome Hearthstone content throughout the week at hearthstone.blizzpro.com. And you can also tweet us at WellMet Podcast or email us at WellMet@BlizzPro.com with comments, questions, and ideas you have for the show. Thanks for tuning in. See you guys next week. Bye.